We have a busy meeting today, so I will call to order this meeting of Education Policy. Our first order of business today is approving the minutes from Tuesday, February 21st. And I will call on Representative Berg. Have you had a moment to look at the minutes? And will you make the motion for us?
Madam Chair, I have reviewed the minutes, and I move them.
All right. Thank you. Representative Berg moves the minutes from Tuesday, February 21st. Any discussion of the minutes? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. We do have the minutes from February 21st. As I mentioned before, we do have a busy committee meeting. We have great, interesting bills, great content for our students in Minnesota going forward. There are four of them, and we want to make sure that each bill does get its time to have a presentation and have discussion. So we're going to be watching the time. We've watching the time of everybody, presenters, as well as our bill authors. And we'll keep things moving if that works. And of course, there's always follow-up discussion afterwards if there's points that we're not able to cover in this. And then also there's lots of written testimony that's provided for you all and is available to the public. And you have a question, Representative Feist.
I just wanted to mention, I can't hear you that well.
Okay.
And that's
all. All right. I'll lean into it. All right. Thank you. All right. With that, I think that introduction, we will look to Representative Sensor Mura that's bringing our first bill forward, which is House File 1502. We have allocated approximately half an hour for this bill. So Representative Muir Sensor, welcome to the committee. And if you would, I'll let you introduce yourself, but I'll first of all offer to bring your bill before us for consideration. So I will move, I think we're going to have Representative Frazier do that because you are one of the co-authors of this bill. All right, Representative Frazier, would you like to motion House File 1502 before the committee to be re-referred to the Education Finance Committee?
I would, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. So moved. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. All right. And so now we will, Sensor Mura, that you, Representative Sensor Mura, that you do have an amendment to get the bill in the in the shape that you would like it to be discussed today. I will move the amendment to be before us right now. And again, members, this is an author's amendment, and it's the way that the bill should be discussed today. So if that's all right, I will move the author's amendment, which is the A1.
Chair Pryor, I can briefly describe the amendment, if that's okay with you.
Please proceed.
The A1 amendment gets the bill in the shape that I would like it. It's mainly clarifying things. It is clarifying some of the language about the graduation requirement portion of the bill, clarifying that the 0.5 credit for ethnic studies can fall into social studies, art, English, science, or elective. Additionally, there is a section of the bill that discusses ethnic studies courses focused on specific ethnicities, and it adds Karen as to Hmong and Somali courses. It also changes just a few things about the ethnic studies working group. It adds administrators to that group, which we thought was a pretty key group. It also recognizes that generally elementary and middle school teachers are generalists rather than specifically ethnic studies teachers. And it also just clarifies some of the language under the school needs assessment portion. We're asking school districts to gather feedback from their community about what their ethnic studies courses should be. And we just wanted to make sure that that language was as broad as possible to give districts flexibility in how they do that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Sensor Mura. All right. Any discussion or question on the amendment that that we have before us right now, the A1? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. So we now have the bill before us as amended with the A1 amendment. All right. Representative Sensor Mura, if you are prepared, please introduce yourself to the committee and introduce your bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Samantha Sensor Mura. I'm a representative from South Minneapolis, District 63A. I come before you today to represent House File 1502, a bill for ethnic studies for all Minnesota students. This is not the first time that this bill has been introduced, and I want to give credit to Representative Fu Lee and Representative Cedric Frazier before me, who have worked with advocates, including the Ethnic Studies Coalition, on pushing this important legislation forward. The Ethnic Studies for All legislation offers the opportunity to bridge the ethnic and cultural divide in Minnesota classrooms by incorporating ethnic studies instruction for all students. The Ethnic Studies for All legislation would do three things. First, it would embed ethnic studies in all K-12 schools, starting with a graduation requirement for high school students. Second, it would create an Ethnic Studies Advisory Working Group composed of a diverse array of educators, students, and community experts to advise MDE on ethnic studies content and standards. And third, it would provide support and aid to local school districts in the development and implementation of ethnic studies curriculum tailored to their community's needs and interests. I want to start with a personal experience that explains why I am so invested in this bill and in this work. In ninth grade, I was in a world studies class in Minneapolis Public Schools. It was the end of the year, and I was frustrated that we had spent our entire time in this class focused on the continent and the countries of Europe. I stayed after class to ask the teacher when we might learn about other countries, continents, or cultures. And the teacher told me that I could learn about that when I got to college. That experience has stayed with me. I did get a chance to go on to college and take ethnic studies courses. But I know that many of my classmates, students of color, did not have that opportunity. And I believe that one of the reasons we lose students of color within our school system is due to disengagement that comes when you don't see yourself reflected, when you don't see your history, your culture, your people valued or taught. There's a metaphor that is popular in education that says the best education should offer students mirrors and windows. Mirrors to be able to see themselves, to learn their histories, to learn their stories, to see themselves reflected in the curriculum, and windows to be able to understand other experiences, other cultures. Currently, so much of our curriculum in Minnesota is lacking those windows and mirrors, and ethnic studies is an opportunity to start changing that. Students from across the state are asking for this course. Yesterday at the Capitol, we had hundreds of students rallying in the rotunda, and they were from all over our state, St. Paul, Minneapolis, Worthington, Shakopee. Over 30 districts across our state already offer ethnic studies courses or courses that would meet an ethnic studies requirement. Courses such as Native American Studies in Lord Port School District that Representative Knudsen represents, Diversity in America in the Eden Valley Watkins School District that Representative Erdahl represents, and Hmong and Somali Studies in Minneapolis, the district I represent. Students of all racial and ethnic identities benefit from ethnic studies. Today's students are growing up in a more globalized and interconnected world. Ethnic studies invite students to more deeply explore the many diverse cultures and identities within our state and country, and in doing so, students gain a better understanding of themselves and their classmates. Ethnic studies equip students with the knowledge and perspectives to live and lead in a more diverse, globalized, and interconnected world. I just want to end with kind of talking about the approach to this bill, because I think we're going to have a more broad, you know, or you all are going to have a more broad discussion today just kind of about, you know, graduation requirements and kind of what it may mean to change those for students in Minnesota. You know, and I want to say that as the author of this piece of legislation, I really want to say that we're not taking it like lightly to add a graduation requirement. We do, you know, understand some of the constraints that could add on students, that could add on a school district. And so we are trying to be as thoughtful as possible, but we also know, you know, and I had a good conversation with Representative Erdahl today about this, that making something a graduation requirement is really the only way we can ensure that all students have access to that kind of course. And so we, with this bill and with the language that has been updated from previous years, you know, we are trying to give as much flexibility to districts as possible and kind of where they put this class, how they can, you know, pair it with other offerings. But we know that every student in Minnesota would benefit from ethnic studies, and that's why we chose the approach that we did. So thank you. I look forward to continuing this discussion, and I would now like to yield the rest of my time to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Centenura. The first testifier that I have on my list is Veronica Arellano. Please introduce yourself again and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. I'm Veronica Arellano Martinez, I am a second-year student at Augsburg University, and I graduated from Hardin High School. I am in support of Ethnic Studies for All Bill, HF 1502. I support Ethnic Studies because I have experienced the positive influence it has on one's life. Ethnic Studies has helped me to understand the systems in our society and to think critically about them. I feel more comfortable in my own skin and confident enough to articulate myself and voice my opinions. Ethnic Studies has helped me to learn about the people around me and in my community. In my college Ethnic Studies courses, I have worked with a diverse array of students. These classes and the conversations experience has helped us and my peers learn about one another, realize our commonalities, and connect to each other on a deeper level. Despite all racial and ethnic differences, we grew closer as a class and as a community. At my high school, I was a part of a mixed demographic of students, most of us not being white. The issue that we faced was that our education did not reflect us. Unlike Augsburg, there wasn't a space for students like me to build their own identities. I did not get to learn about my history or my culture. I did not learn about myself as a Mexican-American or where I fit in society. I did not feel as prepared for the conversations I would have later in college. I strongly believe that if our education was more inclusive, if we had ethnic studies in our K-12 schools, students like me would gain a better understanding of their own identity, feel more connected to their community, and be interested in pursuing a higher education. Thank you for your time. I urge you all to vote yes to HF 1502, Ethnic Studies for All Bill.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony and being with us today. I appreciate it. We have our next testifier is remote. Jocelyn Thepmontry, if you can hear us, please unmute yourself and identify yourself and proceed with your testimony. Excellent. Well, we can see that you're coming on.
Hello, my name is Jocelyn Marie Tabachi. I'm a sixth grade student from Worthington Middle School. I'm also a young organizer at Worthington, Minnesota with Unidos Minnesota. When I think about what we have learned at school, what I remember hearing is how Abraham Lincoln freed the slave states and their capitals, but think of gold and other people have changed the world, but none of them look like me. The only time I feel somewhat represented was when I was told about slavery for a few days, and Martin Luther King on the Friday before MLK Day. We feel like celebrating people of color, one month a year isn't enough to share and learn from their struggles, their inventions, their greatness. We should be learning about the impacts that they had throughout the year. I haven't felt represented in a long time, and I want to know that my people are important to society. In school, we talk about how Columbus discovered America as if people did not live here already. We completely erase those who were here in Minnesota and the country before us. Fifth through eighth grade is a time where we try to figure out where we are and where we fit in. Ethnic studies in our school would let us and our friends see that our community of color did more than just suffer and wait to be saved. I want others to learn how my Hispanic and Asian community impacted the state and country, how we are artists, architects, engineers, writers, and so much more made a change for the state. I need to learn and see myself in books more. More than just the week during Hispanic Heritage Month, Asian American or Pacific Islander Month, and Black History Month. That's why we stand here today representing youth from Greater Minnesota in support of the Ethnic Studies Bill. Thank you all to vote. Yeah.
Thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciated hearing about your experience and very impressive. All right. I believe that we will now go to our in-person testifier again, Dr. Brian Losinski. And please identify yourself and proceed.
Sure. Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you to everyone on the committee for hearing our testimony. My name is Brian Losinski. I'm a professor of urban and multicultural education at McAllister College, and I'm also a parent of three children who are in Minnesota schools. This morning, I spent the morning at my daughter's school, elementary school, doing a lesson for Black History Month, and I know plenty of other parents have been in the same boat. And while this may sound like a cute anecdote, I actually think it's more indicative of the problem that the Ethnic Studies for All Bill seeks to address. And that is the, you know, this supplementing of our children's education by farming out the responsibility to sympathetic parents who are, you know, coming in to be able to do this work. This is not a sustainable model for engaging in ethnic studies-based education in our schools. I come here with the question, what does it mean to prepare Minnesota students for post-secondary education and to participate in a broader and globalized world? There are currently little expectations and absolutely no assurances that Minnesota students will graduate with the intra and intercultural knowledge frameworks that Representative Sensenmira talked about as mirrors and windows. We leave it to the hands typically of social studies educators, but this is not sufficient. Ethnic studies disciplines were created specifically because of the superficial and marginal approaches to the histories and knowledge of communities of color that have defined the disciplines of history, sociology, anthropology, geography, and many of the humanities. The best of these disciplines do already incorporate ethnic studies, the philosophies and practices that these forms of knowledge bring. But absent this bill, we cannot expect the majority of Minnesota students to receive the holistic education that ethnic studies provides. We cannot continue to leave it up to chance that a particular teacher will reach out to a parent or a community expert to invite them to their classroom to supplement their lack of content knowledge. As faculty at a post-secondary institution, it's been my experience that Minnesota students are not prepared to engage in ethnic studies curricula. We're forced to remediate our content to make up for the absence of ethnic studies approaches in the state. And the passage of this graduation requirement will ensure that Minnesota students will be prepared at a very base level to engage with the surrounding world and not operate in a bubble. And so I encourage you to vote to pass the HF 1502. Thank you.
Thank you. And in person, we have Ms. Jocelyn Navarro-Cano.
Hello. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking the moment to hear my testimony. My name is Jocelyn Guadalupe Navarro-Cano, and I'm an ethnic studies teacher. I was actually born and raised here in South Minneapolis, and I attended Minnesota schools all my life. But I rarely ever saw myself in the curriculum. When I attended my first year of college at the University of Minnesota, I took my first Chicano Latino history class. Opening the first Latino history book for me felt like finally I see myself, I exist, I have a place in this country. And this actually led to my choice of becoming a teacher, specifically an ethnic studies teacher, because I don't think students have to wait until college to find out about their histories, especially since the number of students attending higher education is so low. I believe that ethnic studies empowers students to become active learners and citizens. I've seen it in my own classrooms, the way that learning about themselves really changes students in a positive way. I believe ethnic studies fosters understanding and empathy, which I believe will create a better world. One of my first students was a student who was very difficult to engage. I realized, though, that the topics that were actually engaging him were the ones that told his story and helped him better understand his own story. From there, the relationship with school for him really changed. He really began to have this desire to learn and further engage with the things that he was learning or he was seeing in classes. And learn the different skills he needed to be able to really grasp the topics he was seeing in my classroom. Unfortunately, that student wasn't able to continue school because of his age, but ethnic studies did really change the student's relationship with learning and with himself. He was more motivated and open to growth because he saw himself and his story in a classroom. Now, the younger students in my classrooms are critically thinking and discussing social issues, and I'm watching how the students who are taking various ethnic studies classes engage with their studies in a much different way than the students who might just take one or no ethnic studies courses. Knowing and understanding their stories really does change the way students are seeing school and the way that they're learning. And with these classes, we can create significant changes in our schools. Ethnic studies will give all students the tools to be the leaders of the world that we want to see for our future. So thank you. I hope you vote yes on the HF 1502.
Thank you. Thank you for testifying today. Thank you also for choosing your career in teaching. We really appreciate your leadership there. All right, we have a public testifier that signed up, Mr. Jeff Peterson. If you're here right now, can you move to the stand and proceed? And if you identify yourself again and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jeff Peterson. I'm a volunteer with the Minnesota chapter of FAIR, the Foundation Against Intolerance and Racism. FAIR is dedicated to advancing civil rights for all Americans and promoting a common culture based on fairness, understanding, and humanity. We believe House File 1502 does not uphold these objectives. We also believe that our future depends on our ability to teach children nonpartisan habits and values necessary to the proper functioning of a liberal democracy. And this includes a fact-based, balanced, and honest account of our nation's history, both its revolutionary founding, promise of freedom and equality, as well as the times we have failed to keep that promise. HF 1502 would have Minnesota schools teach a version of ethnic studies known as Liberated Ethnic Studies, and it is heavily focused on race consciousness and identity politics. Liberated Ethnic Studies is intent on alienating youth from our institutions, emphasizing victimization rather than agency, and heightening awareness of group differences. This illiberal theory seeks to delegitimize ideas that rest at the core of our American identity, individual merit, tolerance, the rule of law, and compromise through reasoned discussion. This should concern Minnesotans of all backgrounds and political beliefs. In contrast, we believe the vast majority of Minnesota parents favor an inclusive, nonpartisan approach to ethnic studies that broadens students' understanding of American history and important contributions made by people of all ethnic backgrounds. Inclusive ethnic studies avoids a zero-sum mindset and rejects the idea that society's main currency is power and privilege. Most significantly, it advances the constructive view that an individual's personal characteristics, such as character, personality, interests, and talents, contribute substantially to their future success. Let me just sum up that we are very concerned that 502 mandates adoption of a liberated partisan view of American history and contemporary issues, and we ask that you oppose the bill in favor of more inclusive and positive ways to honor heritage while maintaining a shared academic culture.
All right, having no more testifiers, we'll proceed with member discussion. You can return.
Thank you.
I call on Chair Youakim.
Actually, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Peterson, could you come back up? My question is actually to you.
All right, certainly.
Chair Youakim. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You have a question for the previous testifier.
Yes. Sorry, I have questions for the previous testifier, too, and I'm just trying to wrap my head around it. I like when I hear from people what their credentials are.
I'm sorry, I'm having difficulty hearing you.
I want to just wrap my head around the testifiers that we've had, and I like to hear what our testifiers' credentials are. Do you have any academic credentials to look and review curriculum?
Do I have academic credentials?
Yes.
No, I'm speaking as on behalf of FAIR, and I'm not quite sure about the academic credentials associated with the organization. If you would be interested in more information about FAIR, we have a website, and I'd be happy to share that with you.
Chair Youakim.
Madam Chair, thank you. I did look at your website, and it's sorely lacking for information, but maybe we can take that offline. Dr. Lozinski, I am so sorry. I was in the middle of something when you started to testify. Could you maybe go over a little bit of your academic credentials?
Sure.
Lozinski, excuse me. Yes.
Okay. I have a bachelor's degree in operations research engineering and a double major in Africana studies from Cornell University. And I have a master's degree in urban education from the University of Pennsylvania and a doctorate from the University of Minnesota in culture and teaching. And so ethnic studies education is in my purview of expertise.
Thank you. Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you. So I assume that you are used to looking at curriculum and reviewing it and pedagogy and all that. And I should say andragogy, because you actually teach adults too. So is that accurate?
Yes, my PhD is in curriculum and instruction.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right, thank you. Our follow-up with our testifiers. Yes, Representative Yulmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for Representative Spencer. I just have a couple of questions, and since we're so interested in credentials, my credentials is a master's in curriculum instruction with emphasis in literacy, and my doctorate is in education leadership. So I wanted to ask I'm looking at the amended version, but it didn't look like this was removed from the actual version. So under the requirements for ethnic studies, I saw that this is going to be required for K-12, but there isn't a requirement here for age-appropriate standards. And so I wanted to know what the intentions are for when we do create these standards. I didn't see that also in the working group either, so I wanted to know if you would be open to making sure that we have age-appropriate standards for that, Madam Chair?
Representative Sensenbrenner.
Yeah, thank you so much for that question. So there is kind of a two-pronged approach to the ethnic studies kind of curriculum. You know, there was a social studies standard rulemaking, and so ethnic studies is now one of the standards, or one of the, why am I not thinking of the word, strands. and so within that, there are age-appropriate from K-12, you know, standards. So thinking about how can you teach a kindergartner about identity, right? How can you start bringing some of that in a very age-appropriate way? And so with the requirement to teach a K-12, you know, some sort of ethnic studies in K-12, it would be based on those standards, which I think are kind of, you know, lay the groundwork for that. I would also say that, you know, thinking about the age appropriateness, I think that's why we really want to have a working group that includes teachers who are K-5, teachers who are 6-8, who can really, you know, take some of the concepts and really think about how can we make sure this is age appropriate. But, you know, I think that that's a great concern. And if you would potentially be interested in adding, you know, language about age appropriateness, I would be willing to work with you on that. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The other question I had, oh my goodness, and I should have written it down, but it's going to like completely come off of my head, is, I saw in here that we could substitute a language arts class, or we could substitute a social studies class, or we could substitute a science class. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to know what that looked like, because, like, so being a teacher of almost 20 years, I definitely looked at my students, and I live in Austin, where the world has come to live in Austin. And so my classes, we used novels that were representation of all of my students. And so we made sure that our students had the mirrors and windows as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Just want to know what that looks like in science, Madam Chair.
Representative Sensenbrenner.
Yeah, thank you for that question. You know, and I think, again, trying to give as much flexibility to districts while knowing that maybe the majority of classes would fall into English or social studies, you know, I think this is really based actually on where ethnic studies is already being taught, you know, so I think that there's a way you could look at the history of medicine and thinking about how medicine has, you know, enfranchised certain groups or disenfranchised certain groups. I know that that was something that was brought up. I know that I don't know if there's a member of the Ethnic Studies Coalition that might be better able to speak to that, but I could also provide you later with more information about how that could embed into a science class. Thank you.
And
the
final question, Madam Chair. Thank you so much.
And the final question?
Yep, thank you so much.
Representative Bueller.
Oh, just, I think...
Dr. Lisinski.
You have
a
further
response?
I can
give a brief response to the emphasis on STEM and ethnic studies. Ethnic studies approaches STEM as not simply like a technical approach, but also a cultural practice, so that culture also mediates how we engage in scientific exploration, even how we engage in mathematical thinking. So there's a field called ethnomathematics that actually looks at how different cultural groups from around the world approach mathematics through distinct lenses, right? And so thinking about like why did algebra get invented in the 15th century in Islam, right, in the Middle East, right? Why did the Chinese invent the concept of zero, right? These are kind of like ethno-mathematic principles that folks would engage in through an ethnic studies lens. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do appreciate it. So then my final question is, you know, this bill has a lot of pretty heavy-handed mandates to our districts. My question is, and I've received already several emails from school board members that ask us a lot to protect their ability to see what is offered in their school. What is preventing a school district from offering ethnic studies? I did hear in your testimony that 30 districts across the state already offer ethnic studies course, and that we have schools that are already implementing these ethnic study classes. So I just don't understand why we have to create a state down mandate when, if people are finding value in this, and I know that in Austin we are looking at how we can best represent our students as they come from all over the world. I mean, if a person came to our school board and requested this, I'm sure that my school board would be pretty responsive to this. What is preventing a local school district from doing this already?
Yeah, thank you.
Representative Sensenbure.
Yes, thank you for that question. I think I would answer that by saying nothing, right, in terms of law or statute, nothing is preventing a school district from doing it right now. And like you mentioned, you know, over 30 school districts across the state, not just in the metro, do have ethnic studies courses. You know, I think what happens a lot in the legislature is, you know, we see something that's working in a certain place and we see something that would benefit all students. And we want to give the resources to make sure that all students have access to it, right? And so we'll talk about this more at our next stop at Education Finance, but you know, this bill does come with resources, right, to make sure that school districts are able to implement it, to make sure that teachers have the training, to make sure that there's the curriculum, to make sure that the state can really support this initiative. And so I really see this as just, you know, we are mandating, right, because I would say that our job as legislators on this committee is not to protect school boards, it's to protect students, and we have young people who are telling us that I don't see myself in school and I'm disengaging, and we know that that has devastating consequences. And so we can protect students by ensuring that they have access to this curriculum, but we can also ensure that, you know, school districts and teachers are set up for success. I don't want to put in a mandate where people cannot be successful. And so that's why there are resources that are coming with this, along with flexibility, because we know that districts need to implement things in different ways, and districts right now have different resources to do so. So thank you for that question.
Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Spencer-Murrah, for bringing this. I love how you said that we have an idea. We hear about something really great happening across the state, and then we want to implement that everywhere across the state. Whereas my really good idea, maybe my perspective, it's a good idea. Representative Knutson is going to see that as a mandate statewide. So there, I hear what you're saying on that, but many of our ideas that we come up with, they end up being mandates on local school districts. And I appreciate the perspective of protecting students. If we had an honest conversation that everything was grounded in what's best for students, we would be much better at the table. But the reality of it is there's lots of factors that play into the decisions that we make. But I want to start out by just saying that diversity makes us stronger. Rep. Keeler had a great bill last week that we talked about, and diversity makes us stronger. Learning different perspectives makes each of us, just simply at a basic level, better human beings. Dr. Lazinski, all right, you talked about different lenses. To be honest, there are different people. When we talk about ethnic studies, their lens is going to be very different than your lens. So I think we have to recognize that. Students across the state are asking for this. I would say that local school districts across the state are already doing this, and they don't need us to mandate it. These courses are rigorous, and they're developed at the local level, and I think we should be enacting policies that continue to empower our local school districts. One of the things, I appreciate the inclusion of administrators. I would just echo that I think a school board member needs to be a part of that. as well in the working, the ethnic studies working group. But I still have concerns about a working group developing mandates that are developed from one perspective of ethnic studies for the entire state, and thus that eliminates local control, and I will always have concerns with that. So thank you.
I'm going to go to the next member discussion, and we will give you the final words, Representative Sensenmuir. Thank you. Representative Burke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to share my credentials, they are an election certificate. My own intentional journey on white supremacy, implicit bias, and how to be an ally, and nearly 50 years of life experience. I would like to thank the author for bringing this bill forward. And I just want to address the piece around age-appropriate curriculum. It's never not age-appropriate to open up the minds of our students towards the beautiful diversity that they see in their classrooms and communities. That is always going to be age-appropriate all the way up to past me and on. And getting our students to learn and to experience the beauty of their classmates is preventative for some of the issues that we talk about in terms of racism later on. There is no victim mentality here, right? This is an opportunity to provide our students with something that they may become passionate about. What we do in the classroom is teach our students different things that they will carry with them through life and maybe become a doctor, Luzinski, sorry, right? And so to prohibit our students from being able to experience and learn that and develop a passion would be sad indeed. So thank you so much for bringing this bill forward.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and good discussion. I guess I want to hit on two issues, and I'm not going to ask a question, if I could just make a couple comments. First of all, local control is incredibly important. Good ideas are important, too, and that's why we have local control. For example, Minneapolis has come up with a great ethnic studies program, from what I understand, and that's starting to spread. And it will spread to the areas that need it and want it. Somebody else might come up, another area in our state might come up with an even better ethnic studies plan. So that's why taking away local control, I think, is huge here. Not to mention, I think I counted, and there might be more, 6 musts for our schools just in this bill alone. And it puts an incredible burden upon our schools that are already charged with teaching, you know, reading, math, science, social studies, Phi Ed, I could go on. And now this actually adds an entire new category that is outside of, it's separate, and it's going to burden our schools, and it's going to take away from the core functions. And I'll just switch to my second topic, and that's literacy. Literacy is key to learning. It is key to success. It is a key to our achievement gaps. It's key to understanding each other. And I'm going to agree right now that the study of cultures and ethnicities is incredibly important. We're all neighbors. We're neighbors in our own communities, in Austin, Albert Lee, metro, rural, the whole state, our whole nation, our whole world. We need to understand each other because that helps us get along. But this goes too far in the mandating. Let's lead by showing how instead of mandate. I don't see the focus on literacy here, the science of reading. That's incredibly important. We're eating around edges and talking about menstrual products and providing lunches for wealthy family students and all those kinds of things. But literacy, that's the success for life, and I don't see it here. Not to take away from the importance of culture. So I do have a lot of problems with this because of all the mandates and the lack of addressing literacy. So thank you.
Closing comments, Representative Sensenmuir.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for the rich discussion today. Thank you so much to the testifiers that really, I think, were able to add richness and depth. You know, I think where many of you are saying that you see a mandate, I really see that we're ensuring that all students have access to this and we're meeting every single young person where they are at. I know from my own experience as a student, I felt like if you don't see me, if you don't see my history, if you don't see my culture, then I can't learn from you, right? And I think, you know, I've had discussions with teachers, right, who say that I live in an area, I went from 1 year having a totally white classroom, right, to having a classroom with 30 Somali students. And I didn't know what I should be teaching, right? I didn't know what I should be teaching to both, like, make sure that those students were represented in the curriculum, but also so that the students around them were able to interact and to know that history as well. So, you know, I would just say that we heard from our student testifier, we heard from Dr. Lozinski that, you know, I think right now schools are trying, right? But it's February 28th, it's the last day of Black History Month, and you know, Dr. Lozinski was asked to come in, and I don't know the scheduling, but potentially do like a last-minute lesson, right, on Black history. And, you know, that's the experience that I see in schools. That's the experience I had, right, as a Japanese-American student to say, we have a culture day, right? Please bring in a dish from your history. And I think that that's the failures that we've kind of seen of just having an approach that says, leave it up to the schools, they'll be able to incorporate it. This bill is helping schools have the tool to actually, in a real, authentic way, incorporate this education that we know our young people need to be successful. So I look forward to continued conversations. You know, I appreciate the insight. And, you know, I ask that you move this bill forward to education finance. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. And with that, Representative Frazier renews his motion to re-refer House File 1502 as amended to the Education Finance Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion carries, and the bill does move to House to Education Finance. Thank you. All right, we're going to move quickly into our next bill. And with that, Representative Lee, it's going to be House File 759. If you can move to the testifiers table, and also if you have some testifiers that will be with you, they can move up there too. Thank you for being with us today.
So Mira, Representative Lee is going to speak, and then we'll just go to testifiers and speak first, okay?
All right, and if we can be quiet in our transition time, if we can be quiet because we are going to start our next bill.
Yes, please.
Representative Lee, would you like to motion House File 759 before the committee to be re-referred to the Education Finance Committee?
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right.
And before we proceed, I have an amendment.
You do have an amendment. All right. Please introduce your amendment.
Sure. So, Madam Chair, I move to adopt the A2 amendment. I can give an overview of it if needed. I think the summary from House Research is outdated now when we adopt the amendment, so I can go through it a little bit. Basically, the A2 amendment gets the bill in the shape that I'd like it to. It does three really important things. It clarifies and establishes the working group, and then it establishes $4 million for the teacher training and the strategic plan from MDE, and then there's another $4 million for each year for after-school programs and schools that already have in-school computer science courses.
All right. Thank you. Any discussion on the A2 amendment? All right, seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? All right, the A2 amendment is adopted. And I think we can now start with the bill presentation now that it's in the form that you would like.
Great, thank you. Madam Chair and colleagues of the Education Policy Committee, I know we have a really short amount of time today, so I'm going to quickly give an overview and then yield the rest of my time to my testifiers. Today, I present before you House File 759 as amended, which would be a first step in streamlining computer science education courses across Minnesota schools. But before I continue, I do want to take a moment to thank everyone who's been working really hard on this proposal. I want to note that you know, we have former Representative Jim Dabney and also my colleague, Rep. Steve Elkins, who's introduced a similar bill in years past that has also been bipartisan, as well as Representative Kristen Bonner and other advocates from or organizations like code.org and a lot of our Minnesota orgs working to make sure that You know, Minnesota students are well prepared for a 21st century education. We have limited time, so I'd refer you to all the letters that are included in the member packets and then also on the website for folks tuning in. So as I mentioned, the A2 amendment makes sure that House File 759, as amended, you know, puts us on a path towards creating a strategic plan that would lay out a computer science education requirement. And as you guys know, you know, in the last even 5 to 10 years, technology has changed really fast, and we know that the future of work and our workforce will look really different, you know, 20 years from now, maybe even 5 years from now. So what this bill does is we're trying to make sure that, you know, kids in Minnesota are set up for what Chair Pinto would call a great start. And you know, I'm going to yield the rest of my time to Mira, who is here to testify from Minnetonka.
All right. Well, welcome to the committee. And we do have cards, so, you know, we can help you keep track of your testimony. And we are allotting 2 minutes for testifiers today. And as we said before, gosh, we don't have a lot of time. But very, very glad to have you here, Myra Jayant. And please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 759. My name is Mira Jayant, and I attend Minnetonka Middle School West. I'm lucky to go to a school where my classmates and I are able to learn computer science at any age. Learning computer science, for me, began by coding a bee robot to move around with buttons in kindergarten. In elementary school, my friends and I enjoyed participating in Code.org's Hour of Code program by playing games and collaborating in online challenges. Now, in eighth grade, I'm studying how to create graphics in JavaScript, a programming language used to build websites. Learning computer science is unlike math or English in that learnings come from examples and trials, not just from textbooks or lessons. When we're in class, we solve problems and grasp concepts by analyzing and experimenting with an example before applying the knowledge to an exercise. My classmates and I like that this format gives us the independence and freedom to problem solve on our own. It's often said that computer science encourages skills beyond programming. For us, this means learning new skills that apply to other subjects, whether it's learning how to speak or write more effectively, or acquiring new math skills through coding. It also means learning how to be more independent and resourceful. My friends comment on how, through computer science, they feel more comfortable trying new ways to solve problems and asking for help when they need it. These skills are necessary for us to learn in order to prepare us for future professions. For me, I'm planning on taking more computer science in high school to pursue a career in research. Not as many kids are as lucky as we are to be able to take coding throughout grade school. Every student in Minnesota deserves the opportunity to study computer science, not only as a valuable skill, but as a ticket to success in our modern world. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for being with us today from Minnetonka. Appreciate that. Next up, Hannah Weissman.
Hello, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 759. My name is Hannah Weissman, and I'm the Director of Policy at Code.org, which is a national nonprofit working to expand computer science, and we're very lucky to work with many great partners here in Minnesota. This bill, unlike some other bills we're hearing today, is about making the first steps to getting all students the access to computer science education. And as Mira talked about, this is a foundational skill that touches on critical thinking, problem solving, and collaboration. And Minnesota actually used to be a leader in this area. But in the last decade, other states have invested, and Minnesota has fallen behind, which has left Minnesota now to be last in the nation for access to high school computer science courses. And at Code.org, we have seen the impact of legislation similar to this bill. In Iowa, for example, they've allocated over $3 million for computer science education and passed numerous policies. And there's been a striking impact of this. Over 71% of Iowa's high schools now offer computer science, which is a 20% increase to what they did before they passed such policies. And it is not too late for Minnesota to catch up to Iowa and indeed surpass Iowa if we begin making these investments today. I'm also speaking to you not only as a member of Code.org, but as a graduate, a very proud graduate of St. Paul Public Schools. I graduated from Central High School just down the street, and I was lucky enough, like Mira, to take computer science at school. And that gave me the confidence and the skills to take computer science in college and to take a career in computer science and to find myself sitting in front of you all today. And so I believe that every student in Minnesota deserves that opportunity to take a computer science class should they choose, regardless of their zip code, their background, their race, or their gender. And so I urge you all to vote yes in support of House File 579. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Next, I have Jeff Tollefson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Tollefson, and I serve as president of the Minnesota Technology Association. And on behalf of the more than 170 tech-enabled companies that comprise MinTech, I want to thank you for considering this this bill today. Minnesota enjoys a rich history of technology innovation. It was, after all, a Minnesota-made computer game that really drove the adoption of computers into classrooms across the country and even across the world. That game was the Oregon Trail, a game that was created by the those that have played alongside. It was a great game. But that was created by a state-funded organization, the Minnesota Educational Computing Consortium, in the 1970s. But my, how we have fallen. Our lack of commitment to and investment in computer science education has now resulted in us ranking last, as Hannah had said, in the country. And when I share this embarrassing statistic with business leaders across the state, they're shocked, they're astounded, and they're asking, what are we doing as business, education, and government leaders to address this problem? The time for action is now, as we have under-prioritized and under-invested in STEM education for far too long. And at a time when every industry is impacted by digital technology, increasing access to computer science coursework not only provides an essential foundation to students for every career in today's world, it will create a pool of homegrown, digitally skilled, employment-ready talent for the benefit of all Minnesota businesses. Minnesota companies will not be able to remain globally competitive if we don't solve this critical talent pipeline issue, as business demand for computational thinkers far outstrips available supply. Without access to appropriately skilled tech talent, companies have to look elsewhere, such as offshoring to overseas contractors or turning to neighboring states that have invested differently, like Iowa, Wisconsin, and even North Dakota. This translates to a loss of opportunity for Minnesota residents, a loss of tax revenue for the state, and a loss of productivity for Minnesota companies. We urge you to pass House File 759 so that all students in Minnesota may have access to high-quality computer science learning opportunities, such as MIRA has in Minnetonka, enabling them to become technology creators and not just consumers of it, and to fill the tech jobs our business community increasingly needs for continued business success. The future of Minnesota's innovation economy depends on it. We thank you in advance for your support of this critical investment in Minnesota's future.
Thank you. And we do have a public testifier, Mr. Doshuni.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Doshuni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education, and I appreciate the opportunity to provide some thoughts on this bill. We really want to highlight the shared goal that the administration has with the author and with the advocates around expanding opportunities for computer science for another rigorous coursework, of course, for our students across Minnesota. We've heard today quite clearly that Minnesota really lags behind the rest of the country in the opportunities for computer science. And the perception is mainly that the benefits are primarily for college-bound students. And we, with the governor's action recently last year to sign on to the Interstate Compact and in the budget proposal, this should be expanded not only for students who are college-bound, but also for students who are looking for workforce readiness benefits. This has great benefit across Minnesota's economy, and by expanding opportunities to all students, we'll recognize that access to opportunities provide benefits up and down vertically in our economy. As I mentioned, last year the governor signed on to the Interstate Compact. I want to also mention that the shared interest in expanding access to computer science with the recent revision to the academic standards in science, English Language Arts and Social Studies, as well as the forthcoming version 3 mathematics standards all include computer science concepts, which are also integrated at the benchmark level. We also agree that with these expanded opportunity or expanded integration in our academic standards, more training is needed for teachers to be prepared to teach on these benchmarks. And then, as I mentioned, in the governor's education budget, proposal also includes investments increasing access to computer science by establishing a task force, collecting and analyzing data, and creating a competitive grant opportunity. And I would just like to conclude, we really appreciate the outreach from the author and the advocates on this bill and their willingness to work with us on recognizing MDE's role on providing guidance, technical assistance, and housing resources and best practices as opposed to approving any type of course, curriculum, or graduation policy. Thank you for the opportunity to provide the support.
Thank you. Thank you. Having no more testifiers, we will turn to member discussion, and I will call on Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Lee. It's interesting, like, how full circle some of these conversations come, because we were literally, I think you and I were in the same committee this morning, and it always falls back to, like, technology updates, things aren't working well, people are working off of old screens, and, like, I think you were in the conversation this morning, right? Everywhere we go, it always falls back to technology isn't actually working to be the most efficient and effective that it can be. And so I think absolutely we need to look at our next generation and give them the tools to be involved in STEM. It's a way that also our minds think really creatively and expansively. And so I appreciate you bringing this forward. My question is, you know, we always want to get students involved in businesses and entities where we are seen, similar to what the last message was. So we talk a lot about women in STEM and Indigenous students in STEM. Like, what specifically are we doing to make sure that we're culturally infusing this area as well?
Representative Lee.
Sure. Thank you for the question, Rep. Keeler. And yes, there were many times during committee this morning when I wanted to say, hey, you know, there are just so many state systems that we have to update, and you know, we also have to update our software, right, as well as our hardware, and that means investing in human capital. I actually really appreciated the conversation on the previous bill, where we talked about how math and science can be taught differently from different lenses. I know my parents learned math really differently because they learned math in Asia. And so, you know, even like the way they think and the way they compute numbers is really different. And so, you know, I think I did point you to the amendment where we stress STEAM. The A is for arts and being creative, because I think there is an acknowledgement that, you know, even when we're thinking about new technologies, like, it's not just you know, thinking through like what 1+1 is, right? Like, I am definitely not smart enough to explain this, but like, when people are coding, you have to come up with creative solutions. And so I think, I hope I'm answering your question correctly, but we intentionally put in STEAM instead of STEM because we do have to be creative. And, you know, I would just say in our lifetime, right, like, I used to use 5-inch floppy disks, and now we have jump drives, right, that, you know, are as small as your pinky. And so, you know, I think the hope is that we set building blocks so that when kindergartners are learning shapes and colors, that starts the building blocks for learning how to code later. When, you know, they're adults.
We are, thank you for the question and discussion. Any more comments? And otherwise we'll, no? Well, closing comments from our bill author, please.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank all of our witnesses as well as the members for a really good discussion. You know, I think it's clear that, you know, we have to start investing in our children now, as well as our educators. Something that, you know, we didn't really talk about is just how a lot of our teachers also feel ill-equipped to teach computer science and STEM courses to our kids now, because they know that what they know is really limited, and like, it's not even sufficient to prepare our kids for global competitiveness, like Mr. Tolfson mentioned. And so I would just close by saying If we want Minnesota's children to succeed, we must ensure that everyone has equal access to computer science courses. I went to Central, so I love that we share that, but not everyone could go to Central and have the access to these computer science courses. And so I'm hoping that we can significantly increase everyone's earning potentials in the future, and I ask for your consideration to refer House File 759 to the Education Finance Committee.
All right. Thank you, Representative Lee. And with that, Representative Lee renews her motion to re-refer House File 759 as amended to the Education Finance Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails, and House File 759 is on its way. Thank you. Next up, we have Representative Hassan. Thank you. With House File 651. And it is our intention to also refer this to Education Finance. And Representative Berg, there you are, still there. Would you do the honors of making the motion to re-refer House File 659 to the Education Finance Committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 659 be re-referred to the Education Finance Committee.
All right. And then I believe that we do have 651. And I believe that we have a DE3 amendment that we should add at this point. And do you want to make a brief description of the DE3 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The DE3 amendment is an agreed language from stakeholders, students, parents, teachers, and community groups. It's delete all amendments, so we're changing multiple things in the bill and putting it in the shape that I would like the bill to be
discussed. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Representative. Any questions on DE3? All in favor of adopting the DE3 and getting the bill in the order that the author would like it, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. All right. So now we have, as amended, House File 651. Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to present this bill in front of you. I think this is the easiest bill of the day, but we'll see. House File 651 is a bill that requires high school students to take a personal finance course before graduation. It requires students to complete a semester-long course in personal finance for high school graduation in Minnesota. Students can take this course in 9th through 12th grade. Students can choose to take personal finance as an elective or replace it with semester of Algebra 2. The bill has Minnesota adopt recently established quality national standards for the content of high school course in personal finance. Many teachers will be allowed to teach the course, including business, agriculture, education, facts, social studies, and math teachers. The bill allows multiple pathways for teachers to qualify for the personal finance. Why is this bill important? The House Select Committee on Racial Justice in 2020 published specifically called for a high school required course in financial literacy. Only 7% of Minnesota students take personal finance in their high school years. And 17 states have already passed this as a requirement. In response to an August 2022 Minnesota State Fair poll, House poll, 90% of the respondents, which were 6,622 people, said yes to the question of should high school students take a personal finance before graduation. 59% of Minnesotans could not correctly answer more than 3 questions about everyday finance and economics. And 43% of Minnesotans don't have a rainy day fund if something happens to cover 90 days expense. Implementing personal finance as a high school graduation requirement is correlated with lowering the levels of non-student debt later in life. It also decreases payday lending and increases the rate which students' loans are repaid. Our students deserve a well-balanced education. so then they can live a healthier, happier, and more secure life. High schools across the state teach geometry, art, and history, which are all important subjects. But I ask you, how often does one need to measure, to calculate the area of trapezoid in life? Here is the breakdown on how parents feel about personal finances. 30% of parents say it should start in elementary school. 33% believe it should start in middle school. 32% believe that it should start in high school, and only 5% of parents believe that it should start in college. There are ample reasons why we should require our students to learn about personal finances. Consider this data. More than 189 million Americans have credit cards. The average credit card holder has at least 4 credit cards. And the average household with a credit card carries about $8,398 in credit card debt. The U.S. consumer debt is over $16 trillion today. That includes mortgages, auto loans, credit cards, and student loans. Being in debt increases the chance of someone having higher levels of stress, which leads to poor health outcomes, including anxiety and depression. There's a link between suicide and being in debt, with people who commit suicide who are 8 times more likely to be in debt. Lastly, but not least, the lack of financial knowledge has an adverse impact on our young people's future, including but not limited to divorce, poor health outcomes, depression, and bankruptcy. With that, Madam Chair, I have testifiers here with me who will give you more reasons why we should support this bill. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And again, we have a reminder of our time limits up here in CARS. Dr. Julie Bunn.
Thank you. Chair Pryor and members, my name is Julie Bunn. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Council on Academic Education. I speak to you today as one of several facilitators of a collaborative efforts to develop and advocate for this bill. My remarks seek to provide context for the bill. Over the past decade, a national movement has emerged from both the adoption of a personal finance course for high school students, and as Representative mentioned, 7 states have now adopted such a requirement. There are 3 primary reasons for this. First, the research on the benefits of a substantive semester equivalent course is extraordinarily strong. Student financial behaviors and decision-making improve very positively over the short and long run. Moreover, there's a positive trickle-up effect to their families of those students. Second, and very importantly, the national research comparing outcomes for states with required courses to those with loose standards and embedded content shows that where only standards exist, schools with wider and wealthier populations students provide more access to personal finance than those with more diverse and lower income populations. This is an equity issue. Third, there's a strong public support, as we've referred to, for this course, both nationally and our state. Polls go from high 80s to low 90s for requiring such a course. Over a year ago, Minnesota leaders in the nonprofit and private sectors set in motion a 2-pronged process that resulted in the bill before you today. And the long list of endorsing organizations that you can find on the first page of your packet for this bill shows that. First, the teacher organization leaders formed a work group to understand the research, looked at all the other bills, and worked together to come up with a consensus language for the bill before you today. And she mentioned that this included business teachers, family and consumer science teachers, social studies teachers, organizations, et cetera. Additionally, the work group conferred with agriculture educators, Pellsby and MD. The goal of these efforts were to pass a semester equivalent course requirement with quality content and taught by qualified teachers, but beyond that, to provide the districts and students as much flexibility as possible to comply with the requirement. Thank you for consideration of House File 651.
Thank you, Dr. Bunn. We have 2 remote testifiers. First of all, David Broughton, if you can hear this, please unmute yourself, identify yourself, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Chair Pryor and committee members, my name is David Broughton, and I am a business education teacher at Hopkins High School, speaking in support of House File 0651. I am proud to say that I had the opportunity to be a part of one of the first school districts in Minnesota to offer personal finance as a required standalone course for high school graduation. Hopkins School District's journey for requiring personal finance as a graduation requirement began through our district strategic planning work back in 2008 and 2010. Through this process, the planning committee determined that students need not only be literate in such things as math, reading, or language, but also in financial concepts. We also recognized that at that time, the critical economic situation of our country, and felt our district should be responsive to the real-life matters of our students and their future. Further, we believe proper financial education is an equity issue. It is needed to help level the playing field for all our students and to help end the cycle of generational poverty. Throughout the past 10 years, I have received endless examples of positive student-parent feedback, validating the importance of financial education. I've heard several times that this is one of the most important classes I've ever taken. It's all about real life. I can recall a specific example of a student whose family was unbanked and soon realized the importance of a single mother doing her 1040 tax return. After having learned about taxes himself and how to complete the 1040, he realized that his mother would most likely get much of her federal and state money back. He was eager to help her with this task as every dollar was important to this family. What a rewarding moment to see direct relevance of classroom learning to real-world application. For us at Hopkins High School, we addressed early on the need to have this course be taught as a standalone course with intention by teachers who are trained and passionate about teaching this curriculum. We believed it was important for this course content to not just be embedded in other already saturated course curriculums, as it does not give most students adequate financial training. Lastly, we know there are endless examples depicting the lack of adequate training on financial education in our country. In many schools, it appears to be a very hit and miss approach to teaching this literacy. It's time we recognize that financial education is not optional, but critical for our students as young adults. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Oh, there we are. in person, Lois Lewis.
The next one is another remote.
Okay. Jane Sims.
Hello. Sorry. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jaden Sims. I'm a first-year student at McAllister. I graduated from Washington Technology Magnet School. As a graduate who attended a poor socioeconomic high school, financial literacy was never implemented as a class that was important. We were offered one as an elective, but if you were struggling with your academics, you didn't... you didn't have the time to take it. As a well-off student who was granted the benefits to take college classes for free, I still didn't get the emphasis of financial literacy. When I entered the real world and tried to manage my finances, I recognized that I didn't know much about credit scores, 401ks, and loans. Luckily, I had parents and family members who had some knowledge of financial literacy, but what about the kids who weren't exposed? At times, I struggled with keeping track of my finances. What effects do interest rates have on my loans? What does it mean to use more than 30% of my credit card? And what college should I go to not be in, to not fall into debt? When I recall back to my high school years, I remember students who were either first ones to go to college or the first ones to finish high school in their families. Having a class that teaches high schoolers, first gen or not, the importance of finances can help implement good financial stances for families. Students can teach their parents about financial knowledge that they might not know. Financial literacy should be a class that is a graduation requirement because it can lead to a healthy economy, good financial decision making, strong relationships between families, and better knowledge about the real world finances in general. Thank you.
Thank you. That was wonderful. I think at this point, we're going to turn to member discussion, and we just have a couple
you
comments.
You have one more person on.
We're having trouble with the remote now, so I'm sorry.
All right, that's fine.
And we're also running out of time. and so we'll try to keep comments brief, and thank you, Representative Chair Yuokim.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hassan, for bringing this forward. You and I both had the benefits of Hopkins having this as a requirement. The half credit in middle school, junior high at the time, and half credit in high school was bummed when they dropped out the half credit in junior high. And I'm glad you brought this bill forward. The only question I have, and this is one of my only concerns, I know I've spoken to you about this before, the half credit, having it track with Algebra 2 may not work for kids to have that base for graduation. You start Algebra 1 by statute. I believe it still is that way. You have to do it in eighth grade, which is not a credit-bearing for high school graduation. So then you'd end up with, you look at the track, you'd end up in geometry, then algebra 2, and then you'd have to have another math class. And if you're losing part of algebra 2, it's really hard to get to that other math class. Mm-hmm. But I also agree definitely with what Ms. Jaden Sims said on, if you don't make it a requirement, kids that, if you make it an elective, kids don't get to it if they're behind in other courses. So I'd still, I appreciate all the flexibility that you had in your DE, but I caution, I noticed when you listed the teachers you talked to, it wasn't a math teacher. So I'd caution looking at some of that, how that lines up for the standards, and maybe not having that included in the bill. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Budd.
Chair Pryor and Representative O'Kane, first of all, we did reach out to the math teachers as well, but didn't get a response to them to meet with us. They even canceled one of the meetings we asked for. Secondly, we did meet with MD, particularly because you raised this issue last week. We had a meeting on Monday with the staff and the knowledgeable staff and MD about this further. We are not wedded to this piece of the bill. This was recommended to us. It's also a piece that appears in bills in other states. We were trying to give districts greater flexibility about what their options were with credits. If it was counted as a math credit, it would count as part of the three credits. But I do understand, including from our meeting on Monday with MDE, that there's sequencing issues here, and particularly with the new standards, how they're going to be implemented. So they were going to go back and have internal discussions at MDE of whether or not there was another way in the math area at all to structure something that would work. Otherwise, as I said, we're open for continued discussion on this element.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Representative Bennett?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just say briefly, I'll just share my own inner struggle of these areas, like personal finance, I think, incredibly important. And it's part of what should be taught already in our curriculum. Computer science already should be taught in our curriculum. It's required. And we'll be talking about civics in a minute and already in our curriculum. So my inner struggle is, these are all important areas that are within our curriculum currently, but should we be mandating them in there? It's a tough struggle because I see both sides, so thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. And I think with that, that sounds like a perfect opportunity for closing comments from our bill author.
I know you guys are short on time, so I'll keep it short. This bill has bipartisan support in the House and in the Senate, and I appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation, Representative Hassan, and we know that what you're talking about is so important to our students, so we do appreciate that you brought this forward for our consideration. And further consideration, as it leaves this committee, the actual language is still available to us for including in or not including as things can move forward. So appreciate the comments, appreciate the presentation and the discussions. And with that, Representative Berg renews her motion to re-refer House File 651 as amended to the Education Finance Committee. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? All right. Thank you. Education Finance. Representative Erdahl. Our final bill today is House File 358, and members, it is our intention to lay this bill over. Representative Erdahl, would you like to motion 358 before the committee to be laid over?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I would move that House File 358 be laid over for likely inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Always an optimist. Thank you. all right, and then Representative Erdahl, please introduce your bill. And you, I'm sorry, you do have an author's amendment, the A1 amendment.
Yes. I'd like to move the A1 amendment, simple amendment. It just includes 10th graders along with the 11th and 12th graders.
All right. Thank you. Any discussion, questions on the A1 amendment? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Now, please,
right, thank you.
Representative Erdahl, introduce your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, there is actually a Senate companion to this. It just doesn't, the numbers don't match up, but a very similar bill in the Senate with Senator Swadzinski. For over 6 years, I've been attempting to make civics education more important and relevant in Minnesota. Some argue why. It's doing just fine. Is it? The failure of civics education to teach knowledge of the proper ways to influence government is evident. The National Association of Educational Progress, NAEP, the highly respected Nations Report Card attests that in eighth grade, the knowledge level in civics flatlines. In Minnesota, civics is mostly taught in ninth grade. Seniors are graduating at 23% proficiency. In other words, 77% are failing in attainment of civics knowledge. This is bad, but the gap between white and BIPOC students is even worse. Some schools do a good job. All are not failing. 1 in 4 are passing. Civics can be taught in high school. Electives can still be taken. I know of one school that offers 50 electives and teaches civics to 11th and 12th graders. Schools can easily conform to what we're asking for here if they want to. The National Board, College Board reports that the most important skills correlated with success in college are computer science and the United States Constitution. We are sending constitutional illiterates to college and other professions. 77% of Americans between 18 and 34 can't name even one of their U.S. senators. Two-thirds of Americans can name at least one judge on American Idol. 15% can name the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Two-thirds of Americans can name only one branch of our government. One-third can't name any. We've been in a civic slide to failure for 50 years. Focus on STEM, which is important, has pushed out civics and history. The feds send $50 per student per year to STEM and $1 a student a year for civics. When taught effectively, civics can equip students with the knowledge and dispositions necessary to become informed and engaged citizens. Civics instruction in Minnesota is inconsistent. It is required by law, but it varies by the amount of time allocated for instruction, whether it is taught as a separate course, embedded in another social studies course, or taught at all. If taught, at what grade level? Students who take civics in ninth grade may never take another civics course. By making civics credit-bearing, it raises its relevance and ensures that it be taught. By teaching it to sophomores, juniors, and seniors, we are reaching young adults who are about ready to vote, get a driver's license, and take their place in our society. Now, I've attempted over the years, 7 of them, to be accommodating with administrators and school districts. Not requiring a specific credit number increases flexibility. In addressing concerns about electives and higher-level courses, I've created an off-ramp. This civics course provision may be exempted if the higher-level course has a civics component. My amendment today included 10th graders for instruction, not just juniors and seniors. To those who question mandates, we already mandate that civics be included in social studies. It's in state law. We mandate that fundamental knowledge be taught. It should also be learned. There is still much flexibility for our local school boards. Those who oppose this either don't think civics is important or that it's working just fine the way it is, and both assumptions are wrong. Regarding our civics opportunity gap, Avriel Kelly, a black public school teacher, asserts, civics programs improve and promote the voices of black and Latinx students in low-income areas. Now they live in a civics desert devoid of opportunity. We can do better. We must do better. We are failing now to educate our young people about the basic foundations of our country. I have tried to make accommodations and compromises to address concerns, and after years of trying, it's time to get it done. The status quo is a recipe for failure. One final quote. Dangerously low proportions of the public understand and trust our democratic institutions. Majorities are functionally illiterate on our constitutional principles and forms. The relative neglect of civic education in the past half century, a period of wrenching change, is one important cause of our civic and political dysfunction. So, thank you, and I have a couple of testifiers.
Thank you. All right, I have Anastasia Belladonna Correa.
Provided a written statement, and Justice Anderson is not here. I'll start with Lisa Larson.
Lisa Larson.
Former Education Committee staffer here in the House.
All right. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Madam Chair, thank you. Good afternoon to you and to committee members. My name is Lisa Larson, and I'm a member of the League of Women Voters of Minnesota. Before I retired, I served as counsel to this Education Policy Committee for many years. Serving in that capacity showed me just how critical it is for citizens to effectively engage with public officials. Civics education is key to the purpose and mission of the League of Women Voters. League members believe democracy depends on informed citizens who actively and effectively participate in their government. Representative Erdahl's House File 358 proposes to require now 10th grade as well as 11th and 12th grade students to complete a credit-bearing civics course in order to graduate from high school. The League of Women Voters supports House File 358 for three reasons. One, civics education is critical to strengthening American democracy. The Founding Fathers regarded education as a way to safeguard America's system of self-governance. Also, improving civics education should have nonpartisan support across the political spectrum. Strengthening American democracy is an interest we should all share in common. And I think the fact that Representative Erdahl has 35 authors, the maximum allowed from both parties, is a testament to that point. Two, a longstanding tension exists in schools between educating students to be skilled workers and responsible citizens. School culture appears weighted more towards STEM education. Schools are not democratic institutions. I seem to recall there was a book published recently that was called Democracy in Action, and it's a two-word title, not three. Both goals, educating skilled workers and preparing responsible citizens, are important and must work in tandem. It's important for the individual and it's important for society. Three, civic literacy is key to transforming students' knowledge into practice. Civics is not synonymous with history. Civics allows students to apply the knowledge and skill sets they learn in history to civic engagement in their communities and country. A high-quality civics education lets students experience democratic processes, participate in the civic life of their communities, and learn from their experiences. And very briefly, I'd like to just raise three points of clarification about this whole education, civics education debate that has been ongoing for 6+ years. First of all, Minnesota's civics education debate is not about the content of its civic standards or benchmarks, but how to ensure all districts fully and effectively implement state civic standards and benchmarks. Two, given just how fundamental civics education is to democracy, letting each district decide how to teach civics is not in the best interests of either the students or the states. And finally, the statewide civics test and test data are a means to an end. The civics test measures mastery of basic facts, but not students' ability to effectively engage in the affairs of their communities and country, which is the real goal of civics education. We pay attention to what we measure and report. Until Minnesota can ensure civics education in every district gives students the knowledge and skills they need to be effective and engaged citizens, gathering and reporting statewide civics test data is important because it tells us just how much we still must do to achieve that goal. The League of Women Voters of Minnesota urges members to vote in favor of House File 358. Thank you very much for your time and interest.
Thank you. And you have another testifier?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I have with me former Minnesota State Representative Tom Berg. and also a former U.S. attorney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I know it's late in the day, so we'll run through this pretty quick. But I want to tell you a little bit about my background, because I think I had a good perspective on the importance of civics and the role of school boards and teachers and other educators here. I served 8 years in this body on your side of the table, and have fond memories. I hope you'll have the same and be as proud of your service as I am of mine. But one of the things we did when I was in the legislature, before some of you were born, was we passed a bill called the Minnesota Miracle. And we had to get into the nitty-gritty of school matters big time for that. And also we created local government aid, because we understood the importance of local governments as well as state governments to make Minnesota work. And I had a chance as a federal United States attorney to work from the federal perspective and tried to think through all of this stuff and how things work. And I called up Representative Erdahl, and when I found out he was doing this, and said, I want to help that bill any way I can, because I think it's absolutely critical that we get this in the school. I think that the bill is very creatively drafted, well done by the reviser and Representative Erdahl and the groups that worked on it. I think the bill targets a demographic group that is critical, the upper years of high school, and the closer you get to about becoming a voter, I think is very important. I see some young people sitting over there. It's wonderful that they're here watching this, but it would be even better when they're about to turn voters. I think the mechanics of the bill with the local school districts and then the teachers and all who will develop the actual curriculum is very fair and workable. And I just want to close. I had a couple of quotes, and let me just use one of them because of the time. And it's from Robert Maynard Hutchins, a political scientist, a professor, a philosopher, was president of the University of Chicago for a while. And he said this. He said that the death of democracy is not likely to be from ambush. It will be from apathy, indifference, and undernourishment. Representative Erdahl's bill attacks all three of those things that I wholeheartedly concur with. I can't tell you how strongly, from my perspective, and a bunch of other legislators from way back that I meet with from time to time, think that how important this bill is. So I strongly urge a vote to pass this bill and help out on the House floor if the going gets tough at that time. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your testimony. I'm going to turn to one public testifier, Mary Hartnett.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Hartnett, and I'm the Executive Director of Clean Elections Minnesota, a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that seeks an inclusive and healthy democracy for our state. We educate voters and advocate for expanded voter access, transparency, and finance reforms. I'm here to speak in support of House File 358, a bill that would require civics education as part of a graduation requirement. It's impressive to see the bipartisan support for this bill, and thank Representative Erdahl for amending the bill to include 10th graders and for introducing it. Clearly, civics education is a unifying issue. Last year's state fair poll of 7,000 people showed that 90% of Minnesotans believe that civics should be a required course. We believe that adding a requirement for civics education would help to protect and expand our democracy. A healthy democracy requires a rising generation that understands what it means to live in a democracy, the threats that it faces, the importance of protecting it, the rights they have within it, and the obligations that come with it. Having students gain an understanding of the processes of government, prevalent political ideologies, civic, civil, and constitutional rights and history, appreciation for civil discourse, free speech, engaging with those whose perspectives differ from their own, and having students develop the civic agency and competence to vote will keep our democracy strong. In the era of rising global authoritarianism and disinformation, civic education and political literacy for future voters is essential. Having a shared or common experience across all schools has the potential to help us repair the divisions in our society and create a common bond and sense of purpose as citizens and create a healthy and inclusive democracy. We urge your support for this bill, and thank you for giving me the time to testify.
Thank you. I'll turn to member discussion and comments. And are we thinking the seven? Seven is the charm? Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a fine piece of legislation.
All right. All right, members, thank you for staying the extra 5 minutes, and the bill is laid over. And we are adjourned.